Welcome back to Zillennials Podcast. Today on Zillennials, we have a special guest. We have Courtney here with us. She's my cousin. And she's going to be talking to us a little bit about cybersecurity and Web3. So thanks so much for coming on, Courtney.
Thanks for having me.
So do you want to start off with just telling us a little bit about like your background in cybersecurity, kind of what you're familiar with doing?
So my background is I went to Purdue University and I got my degree in computer and information technology. And while I was there, I did a co-op for where I did a phishing analysis. So the company I worked for had a bunch of banking customers where it was primarily banking customers, but a lot of customers where whenever they got a phishing email, they would send it to us and we would analyze them and find the domain that it was hosting, the site that they were redirecting the customers or the people to. Mm-hmm. And we would contact the registrars to take down those sites. So that was my first introduction into security. And then I also did some malware detection with them at the end of my co-op, where we would download the malware and kind of see again where it was redirecting people to. And then that was on my LinkedIn, and so that's how my current company found me, is because I had that security background. And then right now I work for a software company that does privileged identity management. And so I started on the implementation team where I would install the software for them. And then I moved about 5 years ago to the consulting side, where I work with customers, get their requirements, and then figure out how our software should be installed and what use cases they're going to use it for and how to use it.
So for like privileged identity management, is that kind of like protecting your online identity?
It would be for, so inside every company, they have credentials. So to log into your computer, to log into Office, and then the information technology team, they'll need access to all of the infrastructure that's running the company's website, their databases, all of the software that keeps the company running. Mm-hmm. And so they have a lot of access to those machines. And so our software will manage the credentials and also can also do like auditing. That's an important one, and like securing the sessions to the target servers.
Awesome.
I think with everything being so online these days, everyone's leaving digital footprints everywhere. And I'm assuming a lot of us lay people are probably making mistakes in terms of what we should be doing. So I was wondering what you think maybe the most common misconceptions are, or what you think people should really know in terms of protecting their online data and accounts.
So one thing that I don't think people realize how important it is your email address. So for example, you associate your email address with your banking sites, with your social media sites, and then you also with, like if you're shopping online, Amazon, you know, all of the different shops, you put in your username and password. And that's also where you go to reset your password. So if someone gets access to your email address, they pretty much have access to everything. So I feel like that's underestimated. So I guess two things I have would be, one, something that I do is I have a separate email address for my banking accounts. So if something were to happen, especially I'm trying to think of a site, but like a clothing shop, you log in and maybe that's not as secure as obviously your bank, but if they get your username and password and it's the same as your banking password, you know, and you bank at a big bank, pretty easy to run that, like everything that they had gotten from a different site against some of the major banking. So yeah, the first one would be a separate email address. And then the other one would be enabling two-factor authentication on your email.
So that was actually one of the questions that I wanted to ask you, was like, how important is two-factor authentication? Like, is it super important? Is it like mildly important? Because I know that all my jobs are like switching over to two-factor authentication. I'm like, oh, like, I don't know. This is interesting, but why?
I would say it's extremely important. And the reason is, so two-factor authentication is, so the most common one is something that you know and something that you have, but it's two combinations of different types of like supplying information. So another one could be something that you are. So for example, biometrics. But yeah, it's very important because it gives that extra layer. So if someone has your password, most likely they don't have your phone.
True. So do you have a personal preference between like doing two-factor authentication like with your phone or with your biometrics? Like, do you have a preference there?
I like my phone because that will transfer if you get a new phone. Usually, if you're getting a text message, that transfers easily to your next phone. Versus, so I guess with the iPhone, I do use the face authentication, but I guess that's not two-factor authentication because you don't supply your password.
So related to two-factor authentication, my school has used that, but they also are changing the way they use it because it used to give you a bunch of different options, like you could do phone, text, or their app. And they recently said that they're getting rid of the phone option because it's not secure because people can get your phone. Is that kind of similar to the email? Like if someone gets into your email, they can get the rest of the info?
It could be like you could obviously give somebody your phone, or if you don't have a passcode and you leave it somewhere. There have been some talks of attacks where like SIM attacks, but I haven't really heard about them being too prevalent.
I'm kind of imagining like somebody goes and like sneaks into your phone software and looking at all your apps. Kind of like, you know how, what's it called? Like, you know when you can let people like take over your computer screen?
Yeah.
But I don't think I've ever seen that really for phones yet.
Yeah, I haven't seen that. Most likely that would exist if you like downloaded a insecure app. So looking at permissions when you're downloading apps, especially if they're not well known.
Oh, that makes me feel like I got to go back and like read all the fine terms and conditions on all my apps. I'm like, oh, I don't read those.
I think kind of related, the whole LastPass thing. That's something that different workplaces have used in the past. And I thought it was kind of interesting because it's presented as the more safe option than just having your passwords everywhere or using the same one. But then I feel like last fall there were one or two notifications about security breaches with them, which honestly I think kind of like what Kaylee put in the question made me think, are they really that safe then? Because if they get into that, then they have everything.
Yes, that is a risk that you have if you use a password manager. Making sure that you have a secured master password when you're using one of those. And then again, making sure that you're going to a trusted company that's investing in their own security to make sure that that doesn't happen. Even with the companies that I work with, you kind of have to do a risk analysis. So is it better to have the passwords stored and be different and unique, or is it better to have them all the same? Because you have to think about what are you actually going to do? So for example, I have a password manager, and all of my banking passwords are different. But when it comes to like something that I'm logging into all the time, it just like human behavior, I don't go to my password manager for all of those. So instead, I created a system that works for me. So either, again, those are different than the most important sites, and so they are all the same password. Or I've heard of some people making like a unique code that they correlate with the site and adding that to their password. Just make sure you never tell anyone what that code is.
Yeah. So for LastPass, because I've never used LastPass, what is it?
So LastPass is those are sites where you log in, you create an account, and then you have a master password to get into your LastPass, and then you put your other passwords in there. So username and password for your bank, for Facebook, for Instagram, so like for all the different sites.
Got you. So it's kind of like, you know how sometimes people like write it down like in a little booklet? It's kind of like a digital booklet of those.
Exactly, yeah.
Oh. I do think it's interesting how sometimes you'll have software through work or something where they'll have part of the password or the whole password like change every like 10 or 30 seconds. I feel like that's becoming more and more common. I know I've encountered that in a couple of different places.
Related to passwords, does changing them actually make a difference? Or, like, how are these people? Because in my head, it's just some person with a computer program running numbers and letters and stuff. So, like, if you're changing it every 4, 6 months, whatever it may be, does that actually help?
Yes. So for someone personally, it does help, because if a hacker takes to, have you heard of, you know, hackers getting username and passwords from a site?
Yeah.
So then if you, again, if you're using human nature, we usually use that same password across the board. And so if they get that, even if it's for the same site, they're going to try and log in with that username and password. But if you've changed it, then it doesn't work on the site that they took it from, and it doesn't work anywhere else. And then from like a company perspective, they have servers that run their infrastructure. And if there's attacks where if they get the hash of that password and the password is the same for all of their servers in the environment, they can use that to log in. And so by changing the password, it changes the hash. But that's more for a company, not really for someone personally to worry about.
I feel like lately there's been a lot of talk around like how to make companies more secure and whatnot. Do you think that in the future we'll see more like cyber attacks in terms of, I guess, not just companies, but even in terms of warfare and stuff? Do you think that that's something that we'll be seeing more in the future?
It is definitely a risk, because everything that we use is connected through technology. So for example, there was in 2010, there was technically a worm, so that's a type of malware called Stuxnet. It is a worm, so it self-propagates, and they believe that it was through USB drives. And the big thing was that infected, I think it was a nuclear power plant in Iran. And what it did is it manipulated the speed of a specific machine, and then it would damage it. And they were talking about how that facility was completely disconnected from the internet, but most likely was infected because someone brought in a USB drive. And then more recently in 2017, there was a ransomware attack called WannaCry. And a ransomware attack, what that does is it propagates throughout the network based on a vulnerability. So what had happened is there was a vulnerability in Windows machines, and if it wasn't patched, this WannaCry software used that to infect a bunch of devices, and then it locks it and encrypts the data. And so you either have to back up and restore the machines, or you're kind of out of luck. And that infected a lot of the national health system in the UK. So people couldn't get to surgery. They were saying that it was rerouting ambulances, and then like you couldn't get the health records. So I think it is a risk, because everything we use runs on technology. I think we'll always continue to see different attacks. On the other side, though, so for example, our power grid, our water system, they do know that that's a risk, so they do invest in security professionals.
It kind of reminds me of, I think I heard a story a while back that kind of reminds me of the medical one that you were talking about, where somebody had essentially like broken in digitally or virtually. I'm not entirely sure. I'm not a software expert. But had broken into the medical systems and essentially were messing with the machinery. So people were like dying because they were holding their machinery ransom, and they were saying like, we'll only give it back to you if you pay like this certain amount of money, which I thought was really scary. I was like, could you imagine if you're in a hospital and they've taken over the technology? Like, what would you even do?
Exactly.
Related to kind of the USB part, I have no idea where I originally heard this, but I heard that you shouldn't put, like, say you're charging your phone, you should always use your little power plug thing that goes in the wall, because say if you're at an airport and you plug it into the USB thing, it creates security. It could create security issues. Is this a real thing?
Yes. I don't plug my phone into anything with the USB, because that's also a way that you transfer data, and you don't know, you know, what's on there. So I always plug into the power strip.
Because I feel like it made sense to me in a common sense way, but I just didn't. I guess once people learn that that's a way you can take data from people, it would become more common.
That's so scary. I've never heard of that. I know that, like, when I was working as a teacher, they would tell the kids, they would be like, don't plug your phones into your computer unless you want your computer to have access to everything on your phone, because otherwise the school will have access to everything on your phone. And so I remember, like, I would have to tell my kids that if I saw them like, oh, I'm just going to charge it in my computer. I'd be like, just so you know, they're going to have access to your whole digital footprint, like, disclaimer. And they'd be like, meh. And they'd do it anyways. And I was like, oh, you're making me nervous.
Well, that's school property. So
I know. I was always like, well, okay. I hope that you're not like doing anything you shouldn't be.
You tried.
I tried to tell them. It's kind of like for work. You know how a lot of the times they'll offer like a Wi-Fi network where it's like, oh yeah, you can join our Wi-Fi network during work. And this is our staff Wi-Fi network for your personal devices. I remember like the union would always tell me, they'd say, don't ever connect to that because they'll have access to all of your data as long as you're connected to that. And I was like, oh yeah, I probably don't want them to know if I'm like checking my personal email or taking a personal call during work. Like, what if they know that I'm talking to change jobs or something? Like, I don't need them to know that. Is that a thing though?
It is a thing where if you're connected to a Wi-Fi network and someone else is connected to the Wi-Fi network, they can technically see what's being transmitted.
Okay, related to that is I've known the general, like, don't connect to the random public Wi-Fi if you're sitting at a cafe. But how does that work if you're, say, like Kaylee's saying, it's like you're on like a work network or you're at school and you're on the school network. Couldn't somebody on that network do the same types of bad things theoretically?
Yeah, exactly.
Good to know.
I'm never connecting to my work Wi-Fi. Oh my gosh. I remember when I was in college, they would offer Wi-Fi for everybody to use and they would be like, yeah, make sure you're never illegally watching movies or illegally downloading music because they see that and they'll just send it right over to the police department. And I was like, oh my gosh, wow, that's so intense. But got to be careful what you do. Make sure that you're not doing anything illegal.
So I think I've read once that like they recommend, say you're at your public cafe, to use your phone hotspot. Is that actually more secure?
That's what I do. So it depends on what I'm doing. If I'm just surfing the web, they can take my data, but I mean, they're taking it anyways if I'm, you know, going through Google or whatnot. But if I'm doing anything that's banking or making a purchase, I'll go through my either my data if I'm on my phone, or I'll connect to my hotspot if I'm on my computer.
So what about, let's say, for example, you're checking your email. Is checking your email a hotspot-worthy thing, or is it like you can be on the public Wi-Fi and check your email?
I'd probably check my email on public Wi-Fi.
Okay, because I'm like, I've definitely checked my email at the airport a couple times, and I'm always like, somebody is going to have access to my email. And I'm really nervous. They're going to know I'm getting all these emails from Facebook, from Instagram, and from Macy's trying to get me to buy more stuff.
Yeah. Half my emails are just the spam, the junk emails.
Yeah, I actually have 3 emails, but I like to stick with, if someone's asking, just do at least the one, but I like having my junk email, so all the junk goes there.
That's so smart.
I told my coworkers that, my old coworkers, I told them, I was like, I've got like an email for professional things, like job applications, etc. I've got one for like my personal, and then I have one for like my spam, and they all looked at me like I was crazy, but I was like, no, like that's how I do it. Because my thing is, whenever you apply to like jobs on job hunting sites, I always feel like it doesn't feel secure to me, because I feel like I always get a ton of spam, which is why I was like, I'd rather just make a separate email for it, so all of that spam just goes to one place.
Most of my spam are like shopping websites that I don't have the courage to unsubscribe from because I'm afraid I'll miss the sale they run every single day.
Yeah, Bath and Body Works, looking at you.
They're like, it expires tonight at midnight. And I'm like, see, if I didn't get this email, I wouldn't know. And then it's like, tomorrow there's a new sale. So like, I should really just unsubscribe.
I feel that. Same. So do VPNs actually really help in terms of protection, or is it kind of one of those things that's like, it does, but it's not as good as you think?
It does help, the VPNs. That stands for Virtual Private Network. And yeah, it encrypts the data. So if you were going to, if you wanted to, so encrypt any secure data or also encrypt, like, so that they're not gathering your data, a VPN would be a good choice. I use it on my computer, not on my phone.
So what about those, I don't know the generic term, but the companies that put together basically software that they say is going to protect your computer and scan for viruses and stuff? Because I feel like I've heard mixed things where some articles I've read are like, you should get it. And then the other articles I read say there are money-making schemes.
So I would say get one, not multiple, just one trusted security scanner. And yeah, I would say that they're important to make sure that you're not getting viruses on your computer.
Okay, good. Because I do have one, and I just like, I'm hoping I'm not wasting my money on this.
No, I would say, yeah, there's also built-in ones that you can use. If you have I'm not so familiar with Mac, but if you have a Windows PC, they have a built-in one. But yeah, definitely important.
Yeah, because I'm like, I don't know, I don't have one, and I have a Mac. I've never had one, but my computer still runs great. So I'm like, it probably has some viruses somewhere in there. I just don't know. I should probably work on getting one. Courtney, after this podcast, I'm going to reach out to you and I'm going to see which ones are good, because I feel like you would know, but you might not be able to recommend a specific one on here.
So if you have a VPN and say you use your hotel Wi-Fi, theoretically, it would be more safe than not.
Yeah, it would be safe because it would be encrypting that data.
Would that also apply if you were at your cafe and, like, joined cafe Wi-Fi?
Yes.
That's good to know. My work gives us a VPN, so now I can use my VPN if I'm working remotely from a cafe or something, or from the library. All important things.
I think that's part of the difficulty in anything, is sometimes you're like, oh, I know I need to do this certain thing, but just digging through all the different options and trying to figure out which one is the best one when you don't have experience, because I feel like you read these websites and they're all gonna say, we'll protect your computer.
Yeah. Or it's like you read all these websites and they're like secretly trying to sell you a product, right? And you're like, I don't know if this is actually a good one, because how do I know that this is a reputable source?
Yeah, usually I try and find like PC Mag or I think it's CNET. It's like some of those sites and their reviews versus anything that is, you know, they're just trying to get clicks and commission.
No TikTok recommendations?
Maybe for a starting point.
Then you got to do your own research. So are there any other things that you personally do for cybersecurity that you would recommend?
So I mentioned the emails. So I do use a password manager. And to give you context, I have 200 passwords in there. And that's not including everything. Like when it comes to like shopping, like all the different websites, I decided I'm just going to use the same username and password for those. So yeah, the password manager, the two-factor authentication, start with your email address, make sure that has two-factor authentication enabled. All your social media has two-factor authentication. And then really anything else, go to the settings and see if they have the option. Those are the main ones. And then, yeah, the other one is just the VPN and not going to banks on public Wi-Fi.
Probably a good one.
Related to that, what do you think makes a good password? Because I think I heard once that thing about make it a phrase, but then substitute the different letters for like characters and numbers. Is that a good tip?
Yeah, you can definitely do that. So the most secure password would be like random letters, numbers, special characters. But again, you have to think about what are you actually going to do. So for example, my bank passwords, I go to my password manager. They're something I can't remember. But for anything else, I use a phrase and I transfer out the different E with three. But the only thing with that is you have to remember, you know, if someone's social engineering you, that's something that they would also try.
So social engineering, is that something that sometimes you'll see in hacking where they'll kind of look for patterns and they'll be like, oh, this is what they do?
It's very common. And my favorite demonstration of this is there's a Jimmy Kimmel clip where he goes onto the strip and is asking people, you know, oh, what's your password? And they're like, oh, my high school and then my dog's name, or my high school and the year. And then he like talks to them and then says, you know, oh, what high school did you go to? What year did you graduate? And then we'll go, so your password's blah, 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 and 2014. And then they are shocked and they're like, yeah, it is. Or like my dog's name and the year I graduated.
Yeah, I know sometimes I think about talking about certain things that would pertain to password security questions, just because they're things I like, right, for this podcast. And I'm just like, I can never have a podcast on this specific thing, just because I know if somebody was ever looking to hack me, they could totally do it if I gave them this information.
Usually mine is like a combination of three, and I actually just set the security questions to all the same. And, you know, they have those Facebook things where they say like, oh, you put something together and it's like, oh, the street you were born on, the name of your dog. And then they correlate to something. It's basically like a code so someone could get your security questions.
Okay, I think I saw that. Maybe Instagram, when they start pushing things on you that you're like, I don't ask to see this. But it's one of those things where it's like, don't do those social media challenges.
Yeah.
Because you're essentially giving away security questions, answers.
Exactly. Yep. And you look at all of them and it's the security questions. That would be a form of like social engineering.
Oh my gosh. I never even realized that. Now I feel like I have to be even more hyper aware. That's insane.
Usually anything that has security questions is important, and so that's something that will go in my password manager, and then I'll put in the notes what my security question is, and usually it's honestly the same thing, like the same answer for all of them for that site.
That makes sense. So I wanted to do a small little pivot, if we can, and talk about Web3 for a little bit. So Courtney, do you want to tell us a little bit about what Web3 is for people out here who maybe just don't know?
So Web3, they're calling it Web3 because they believe it's going to be an iteration of the web that utilizes blockchain. And Web1 was like you could post online. So you had a website, you had a blog post, but that was it. Like it was read-only consumption. And then Web2 was the ability to interact. So you could post in like social networks. That's more of the interaction and social part. So that was Web2. And then Web3, they say, is going to be like ownership. So you post something or buy something and you own it. And not just for that specific site, but across multiple sites.
So for Web3, for example, like you could buy like a digital artwork and it's kind of like having the original copy.
Yeah. So a lot of people say, you know, why do you want to own it when you could just take a screenshot? That's true. If you just want to, for example, have it as the background of your phone, you know, you just need to take a screenshot of it and you can have it. But it's really about the ownership and being able to verify that ownership. And something that we see now is, you know, for example, that allows you to join groups. Like a popular thing in the Web3 space is if you have a specific NFT, you can join their Discord group and then you get access to specific channels because you own the NFT.
I feel like that's really cool. It kind of reminds me of art collecting where you have prints, right? But it's not the same as the original. Or it's kind of like almost like having a subscription where, like you said, if you're allowed to go in and access these other things that you wouldn't be able to access if you didn't have this certain thing. So I feel like that's really interesting. What are your opinions on it? Like, do you think this is going to be the next big thing? Do you think it's something that's going to be a phase? What do you think is going to happen with it?
I'm really excited about it. if someone initially is researching it or has heard about it, usually it's about the monetary. So for example, someone bought this NFT for $100 and they sold it for $100,000. I think that's going to go away. And I think that I don't think people are going to call it NFTs. I think it's just going to be part of like the back end. Kind of like if you go to a website, you don't know what it's built on or anything. You just know that it works and you know that you have the app on the phone and you know that you're ordering something or talking to someone through social media. So I think Web3 is just going to become part of products.
To be honest, I still don't completely get it. So it's like you, like with the Discord channel, buying the NFT token thing. So like you buy it and then you get access to special channels or special different things that other people wouldn't get. But how is that different from like if you go on the website, you buy something and then it gives you access to other things?
That's true. Like if you sign in with the username or password.
Yeah, like if say like something requires like a payment and then you get access to like the community or something like that with your account.
So right now it would be similar to if you log in with a username or password, but that's local to that company's website versus if you have an NFT, it's on a public, they call it a ledger.
Okay.
It could also be, if you know what a database is, it's basically a database. So multiple sites can see that you own that versus if you have an account with a site, one site, you only have that one account.
Right. So it would essentially just start streamlining things.
Yeah. Yeah. It allows you to, one, prove ownership, and then two, the ability to, for other software to see that what you own.
Okay. I think it'll be really interesting to see like what's going to happen in terms of Web3 up and coming, because I know there's been a lot more talk of things being incorporated into like virtual reality and things like that. And I think that, you know, if you own something, like let's say you like playing a video game and you own like a certain like character that you can play in said video game, or like a certain design for like an outfit or something. I feel like that'll be interesting. It might be like maybe only you have that thing.
Yeah, that's a common use case that people are talking about now that some companies are starting to develop.
So another question that I have, because you did mention that sometimes you get access to things like certain Discord channels if you have a token or something else that allows you in. Do you ever see those things going subscription model, kind of like how a lot of things are nowadays? Or do you think it'll be one of those things where it's like, because you bought this thing, as of currently, you always have access to it?
That's a good question. I'm not sure how that will work in the future. I think it'll depend on the people who are developing it, if they'll maybe release a new one every month or every year.
I think it'll be interesting to see. Well, thanks so much for letting us like pick your brain on Web3 and on all of our security questions so that we can make sure that we're not making absolute fools of ourselves online. We really appreciate it. Yeah, so thank you for coming on. Our next book club is going to be Blue-Skinned Gods by S.J. Sindhu.
We hope you enjoyed our discussion on cybersecurity. We hope you learned something. I know Kaylee and I learned things. And you can send us an email or DM us on Instagram. Don't forget to rate Zillennials Podcast on Apple Podcasts. You can find us at zillennialspodcast@gmail.com or Zillennials Podcast on Instagram.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.